Drift is made possible by the generous support of an all-natural supplement, Sierra-Sil, that has helped me, my husband, and even our elderly dogs with joint pain. Their joint formula 14 is so sure that its uniquely patented all-natural minerals will ease your pain, especially in your knees, that it comes with a money-back guarantee. Learn more in the morning. Don't forget at SierraSil.com. Sierra like the mountains, S-I-L. And use the code DRIFT for 10% off. Hello, I'm Erin, and welcome to Drift. Thank you so much for being a special part of our gentle sleep community. And I hope you enjoy our newest offering in the form of a short story by Maurice Baring from the Blue Rose Fairy Book. This tale is titled, quite simply, The Blue Rose, perhaps the lovely story from which the book took its title. It's about an emperor's daughter who sees just what she wants to see, but in the best ways possible. And as we always try to do, most of the time successfully, we'll see that this story has a happy ending. Just before we begin, let me take a moment to thank two of my own angels here, Kathy and Kim, co-founders of the Canadian company Envy Pillow. Their story, too, is a happy one, as two entrepreneurs who saw a need for an eco-friendly pillow that helps your skin through antimicrobial copper, has a unique shape, and is made of only the best materials, and has made a huge difference in so many lives. When you're awake, take the quiz and find out which Envy Pillow is right for you. And don't forget, when you do choose anything from their site, use the code DRIFT for 10% off. That's ENVYPillow.com and sleep with the best. Let's get you into a comfy place of relaxation and of being ready to receive. Now, if you are ready, take one deep breath in and out. And now, in again. And as you exhale, feel your body sinking into your mattress, your chair, your airline seat, wherever you may be. This is a time for you, for rest, for no cares at all. Just be. Okay? Now we're going to let your whole body know this message, and we'll start down at your feet. Now, if you're able, I want you to scrunch up your toes. Now relax them. Tense up your calf muscles and let them go. Now your thighs. Tighten. And relax. Let's move up to your backside. Clenching. And then releasing. Do you feel the difference? You should start noticing how heavy your legs feel. Let's do that with your abs. Clench that tummy. Let it go. Your pecs, your chest. Release. And to your shoulders, bringing them up to your ears, and then letting them release down, way down. Clench your fists. Then slowly relax and open your hands, wiggling your fingers and waving goodbye to the cares of your day. Good. Make your arms rigid and then let them go. Now your neck. Do you feel little crackles like I do when you tense your neck? It holds so much during the day, so just let it go. Release. Maybe you just let out a sigh. To your face now. Relax your brow, your eyelids closing heavily, and your mouth. Thank you for sharing this time, just for you. With one more big inhale. And exhale. Think these words. I am safe. I am loved. I am at peace. And now, if you're ready, let's drift. Once upon a time, there lived in China a wise emperor whose daughter was remarkable for her perfect beauty. Her feet were the smallest in the world. Her eyes were long and slanting and as bright as brown onyxes. And when you heard her laugh, it was like listening to a tinkling stream or to the chimes of a silver bell. Moreover, the emperor's daughter was as wise as she was beautiful, and she chanted the verse of the great poets better than anyone in the land. The emperor was old in years. His son was married and had begotten a son. He was, therefore, quite happy about the succession to the throne. But he wished, before he died, to see his daughter wedded to someone who should be worthy of her. Many suitors presented themselves at the palace as soon as it became known that the emperor desired a son-in-law. But when they reached the palace, they were met by the Lord Chamberlain, who told them the emperor had decided that only the man who found and brought back the blue rose should marry his daughter. The suitors were much puzzled by this order. What was the blue rose, and where was it to be found? In all, 150 suitors had presented themselves, and out of these, 50 at once put away from them all thought of winning the hand of the emperor's daughter, since they considered the condition imposed to be absurd. The other 100 set about trying to find the blue rose. One of them, whose name was Ti Fun Ti, he was a merchant and immensely rich. He went at once to the largest shop in the town and said to the shopkeeper, "I want a blue rose, the best you have." Now the shopkeeper, with many apologies, explained that he did not stock blue roses. He had red roses in profusion, white, pink, and yellow roses, but no blue. There had never been any demand for such a flower up until now. "Well," said Ti Fun Ti, "you must get one for me. I do not mind how much money it costs, but I must have a blue rose." The shopkeeper said he would do his best, but he feared it would be an expensive article and difficult to procure. Another of the suitors, whose name I have forgotten, was a warrior and extremely brave. He mounted his horse, and taking with him 100 archers and 1,000 horsemen, he marched into the territory of the King of Five Rivers, whom he knew to be the richest king in the world and the possessor of the rarest treasures. And he demanded of him the blue rose, threatening him with a terrible doom should he be reluctant to give it up. The King of the Five Rivers, who disliked soldiers and had a horror of noise, violence, and every kind of fuss, his bodyguard was armed solely with fans and sunshades, rose from the cushions on which he was lying when the demand was made, and, tinkling a small bell, said to the servant who straightway appeared, "Fetch me the blue rose." The servant retired and returned shortly, bearing on a silken cushion a large sapphire, which was carved so as to imitate a full-blown rose with all its petals. "This," said the King of the Five Rivers, "is the blue rose. You are welcome to it." The warrior took it, and after making brief, soldier-like thanks, he went straight back to the emperor's palace, saying that he had lost no time in finding the blue rose. He was ushered into the presence of the emperor, who, as soon as he had heard the warrior's story and saw the blue rose which had been brought, sent for his daughter and said to her, This intrepid warrior has brought you what he claims to be the Blue Rose. Has he accomplished the quest? The princess took the precious object in her hands, and after examining it for a moment, said, "This is not a rose at all. It is a sapphire. I have no need of precious stones." And she returned the stone to the warrior, with many elegantly expressed thanks. And the warrior went away, grumbling and upset. When Ti Fun Ti, the merchant, heard of the warrior's failure, he was all the more anxious to win the prize. He sought the shopkeeper and said to him, "Have you got me the blue rose? I trust you have, because if not, you will be in so much trouble. My brother-in-law is chief magistrate, and I am allied by marriage to all the chief officials in the kingdom." Well, the shopkeeper turned pale and said, "Sir, give me 3 days, and I will procure you the blue rose without fail." The merchant granted him the 3 days and went away. Now the shopkeeper was at his wit's end as to what to do, for he knew well that there was no such thing as a blue rose. For 2 days he did nothing but moan and wring his hands. And on the third day he went to his wife and said, "My dearest, we are ruined." But his wife, who was a sensible woman, said, "Nonsense. If there is no such thing as a blue rose, we must make one. Go to the apothecary and ask him for a strong dye, which will change a white rose into a blue one." So the shopkeeper went to the apothecary and asked him for a dye, and the chemist gave him a bottle of red liquid, telling him to pick a white rose and to dip its stalk into the liquid, and the rose would turn blue. The shopkeeper did as he was told. The rose turned into a beautiful blue, and the shopkeeper took it to the merchant, who at once went with it to the palace, saying he had found the blue rose. He was ushered into the presence of the emperor, who, as soon as he saw the blue rose, sent for his daughter and said to her, "This wealthy merchant has brought you what he claims to be the blue rose. Has he accomplished the quest?" The princess took the flower in her hands, and after examining it for a moment, said, "This is a white rose. Its stalk has been dipped in a poisonous dye, and it has turned blue. Were a butterfly to settle upon it, it would die of the potent fume. Take it back. I have no need of a dyed rose." And she returned it to the merchant with many elegantly expressed thanks. The other 98 suitors all sought in various ways for the blue rose. Some of them traveled all over the world seeking it, and one did not hesitate to invoke the help of the fairies that live in the trees. But all of them, whether they traveled in far countries, or took counsel with wizards and demons, or sat pondering in lonely places, failed to find the blue rose. At last they all abandoned the quest, except the Lord Chief Justice, who was the most skilled lawyer and statesman in the country. After thinking over the matter for several months, he sent for the most gifted artist in the country and said to him, "Make me a china cup. Let it be milk-white in color and perfect in shape, and paint on it a rose, a blue rose." The artist did as he was asked and went on his way, and worked for 2 months at the Lord Chief Justice's cup. In 2 months' time it was finished, and the world has never seen such a beautiful cup, so perfect in symmetry, so delicate in texture. And the rose on it, the blue rose, was a living flower, picked in fairyland and floating on the rare milky surface of the porcelain. When the Lord Chief Justice saw it, he gasped with surprise and pleasure, for he was a great lover of porcelain, and never in his life had he seen such a piece. He said to himself, "Without doubt, the blue rose is here on this cup and nowhere else." So, after handsomely rewarding the artist, he went to the emperor's palace and said that he had brought the blue rose. He was ushered into the emperor's presence, who, as he saw the cup sent for his daughter, said to her, "This eminent lawyer has brought you what he claims to be the blue rose. Has he accomplished the quest?" The princess took the bowl in her hands, and after examining it for a moment, said, "This bowl is the most beautiful piece of china I have ever seen. If you are kind enough to let me keep it, I will put it aside until I receive the blue rose. For so beautiful is it that no other flower is worthy to be put in it except the blue rose." The Lord Chief Justice thanked the princess for accepting the bowl with many elegantly turned phrases, and he went away grumbling and very unhappy indeed. After this, there was no one in the whole country who ventured on the quest of the blue rose. It happened that not long after the Lord Chief Justice's attempt, a strolling minstrel visited the kingdom of the emperor. One evening, he was playing his one-stringed instrument outside a dark wall. It was a summer's evening, and the sun had sunk in a glory of dusty gold, and in the violet twilight, one or two stars were twinkling like spearheads. There was an incessant noise made by the croaking of frogs and the chatter of grasshoppers. The minstrel was singing a short song over and over again to a monotonous tune. The sense of it was something like this: "I watched beside the willow trees, the river, as the evening fell. The twilight came and brought no breeze, no dew, no water for the well. When from the tangled banks of grass a bird across the water flew, and in the river's hard gray glass I saw a flash of azure blue." As he sang, he heard a rustle on the wall, and looking up, he saw a slight figure, white against the twilight, beckoning to him. He walked along under the wall until he came to a gate, and there was someone waiting for him. And he was gently led into the shadow of a dark cedar tree. In the twilight, he saw two bright eyes looking at him, and he understood their message. In the twilight, a thousand meaningless nothings were whispered in the light of the stars, and the hours fled swiftly. When the east began to grow light, the princess, for it was she, said it was time to go. "But," said the minstrel, "tomorrow I shall come to the palace and ask for your hand." "Alas," she replied, "I wish that were possible. But my father has made a foolish condition that only he may wed me who finds the blue rose." "That is simple," said the minstrel. "I will find it." And they said good night to each other. The next morning the minstrel went to the palace, and on his way he picked a common white rose from a wayside garden. He was ushered into the emperor's presence, who sent for his daughter and said to her, "This penniless minstrel has brought you what he claims to be the blue rose. Has he accomplished the quest?" The princess took the rose in her hands and said, "Yes, This is without doubt the blue rose. But the Lord Chief Justice and all who were present respectfully pointed out that the rose was a common white rose and not a blue one. And the objection was, with many forms and phrases, conveyed to the princess. I think the rose is blue, said the princess. It is, in fact, the blue rose. Perhaps you are all colorblind. The emperor, with whom the decision rested, decided that if the princess thought the rose was blue, it was blue, for it was well known that her perception was more accurate than that of anyone else in the kingdom. So the minstrel married the princess, and they settled on the seacoast in a little green house with a garden full of white roses, and they lived happily ever afterwards. And the emperor, knowing that his daughter had made a good match, died in peace. And with that, and a reminder that the rose-colored glasses of love can, it seems, be blue as well, I will wish you a good night and sweet dreams.